You're listening to Podcast to Practice, brought to you by Springer Health Plus IME. Podcast to Practice brings you expert-led, independent medical education discussions, inspiring healthcare professionals to maximize their learning and make measurable changes in their own clinical practice.
This podcast is part of an independent medical education program entitled T2D and CKD, Putting Evidence into Practice, and is supported by an independent educational grant from Novo Nordisk.
Hello, everyone out there. It's great to have you on board because I'd love to welcome you to this independent medical education program called Type 2 Diabetes and Chronic Kidney Disease, Putting Evidence into Practice. My name is Tina Vilsbøl. I'm a medical doctor at Steno Diabetes Center in Copenhagen, and I'm a professor in endocrinology, seeing patients with diabetes, and affiliated to the University of Copenhagen, Denmark. But today, it's not about me. It's very much about Molly, who is also here today with me. And I have myself been looking very much forward to this discussion, Molly. Molly is a patient with type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease with a very long experience. Please, Molly, could you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
I'd be happy to. My name is Molly Bowl. I'm from Redmond, Washington, in the United States. I've been a type 2 diabetic for 43 years, and I've had kidney failure for approximately 15 years. I was 32 years old. I was in a cardiologist's office and had ventricular tachycardia. So I just about died in that occurrence and was paddled three times and saw the light. And from then on, I had, I've had six major surgeries in my stomach. I've had various things happen in surgeries related to ventricular tachycardia. And I've had, regarding my CKD, my GFR has gone from stage 3 to stage 4, and then I go back to stage 3 kidney failure, and it vacillates back and forth. So I'm holding my own for kidney failure, and I'm doing very well in type 2 diabetes. I am well managed. My hemoglobin A1Cs are approximately 5.9, and they range up to 6.2 or 6.3. And my doctor, I go to Dr. Hirsch, who's famous endocrinologist, diabetes doctor, and worldwide famous. And I've gone to him for 34 years, so we're more kind of like friends. And he's taught me many things about diabetes. So I'm very fortunate to have him. And I've learned a lot from my doctor, doctors plural, and I'm happy to be here to share what I've learned. I've also taught diabetes classes in the community, and I'm happy to share this with the global community of healthcare providers.
That's really wonderful, Molly. And I would say you are what some would call a professional patient, aren't you? You, with your age and your experience with actually several chronic diseases, you must have met, I almost said, hundreds of doctors, young, old, bright, maybe not as bright. So I think you're actually the perfect want to have a discussion about when we are discussing shared decision making. Because what I would like to is really to pick your brain in respect to how do you see a way to really make a good shared decision. Patients come into the office or the outpatient clinic or into the ward with some expectations. Doctors, they're busy, they have a lot of things on their agenda, which might be completely different from your agenda. So please, you know, what in your experience, and I'd like to focus on your diabetes and chronic kidney disease here. In general, let's put it up, you know, in a more general phase, what What do you think is good? What's your preference to me or to other doctors? What's most important for you for a good consultation and a good shared decision making?
From a patient standpoint, the patient is walking into your office. They first want to trust the doctors, to feel that the doctor is on their side, to feel that the doctor is supporting them. The biggest thing about diabetes and CKD, both diseases are chronic. And because they're chronic, the patient struggles day in and day out, year in and year out, throughout their entire lives, to constantly have to monitor both diet, exercise, and other lifestyle aspects of their life to stay on the road to good health. And that is a struggle many times. I can tell you very interesting stories what I did. I mean, really, really funny ones. I mean, what I did, I denied diabetes in the beginning. I wasn't going to be a diabetic. I was 39 and I was a jock star. I was in perfect health and I was an athlete and I was a executive and a vice president of a big company. And I had an MBA, master's in business, and I was going to go and solve the world's problems. Amen. But finally, my mother took me to Dr. Hirsch, a talk he gave, and I became a student of learning more and more. The more I learned, the better off I was. So what I'm looking for in a doctor is to really educate me. So I like my questions answered. I don't like to be cut off and have a doctor be so rushed. And in the United States, with a culture such as we have today, we have a very old population. Our age of people are getting more and more. So we have more people on Medicare. And so we're limited to 15-minute appointments. You can't really have SDM available. The doctors don't have any time for that. They just work on their computers, ask questions about your meds, and that's it. There's no more time. So we're plagued here in the United States by a time limit for this particular discussion on SDM. But the biggest thing is to trust, to get the doctors to communicate with us about the best treatment, but give us alternatives. In other words, let the doctor be the engineer of the boat, but let the patient be the captain of the boat, because the doctors put in the fuel, which is the treatment, but the patient has to maneuver the ship around. That's their lifestyle. The doctor only sees the patient just 15 minutes or a half an hour, but that patient has to go home and spend hours changing and monitoring their lifestyle to make certain their bodies are following the protocols necessary for good health. And that's how I see it.
Oh, you already give so much valuable information here that we, as healthcare providers, often, I think, unfortunately, forget in a very busy day. I mean, I see my patients 3-4 times, 15 minutes per year. And what you're exactly saying is that you're living with it 24/7. So you have it all the time. And I feel that the time with me is, of course, the most important time. But you have it all day. You have it all year. And that's extraordinarily important. I think you also said that in the U.S., doctors are so busy. Unfortunately, I think it's not only in the U.S. We are all, you know, everything are being more and more lean. So we need to be efficacious. And I have when I see an individual like you, you say we look at the computer, it's because there are so many demands. We need to look into eyes, kidneys, nerves, heart, lipid profile. There are so many tick marks that we have to consider. And what I actually do myself as much as possible is that before I take the patient into my clinic, I try to give myself an overview from the computer, and then I try to do my best. If you talk to my patients, it's not always like that, but I try to do my best to spend at least the first 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes just in eye contact with the patient. For me, that's really important because then I get an impression, you know, where is the patient? What's the agenda of the patient? Are you here to talk about a depression or to get a new glucose-lowering drug? Because then if I'm, you know, talking about different things, we'll not have a good end of the consultation. But I also have to say that I would love to have 1 hour with all my patients, but that's just not an option. So I think one of the things that my suggestion is, at least a tool that I use myself, and I'd like your opinion about that, is to early in the consultation to kind of get an agenda or something like that for the rest of the presentation. You know, what do you want to talk about today, Molly? And then I'll say, well, I also have to talk about allergies and blah, blah, blah. But let's start with your topic. What do you think about that? Is that a way to probably move towards some shared decision making? Or what's your thoughts about that, Molly?
Well, I think doctors today have to remember that some patients are extroverts and some patients are very closed. First of all, you doctors have to size up patients very quickly. You have to have communication skills, which require, I think the medical society needs to have some classes in medical school about communication and about how to communicate to patients and how to size patients up quickly on this score to bring out, because if you have a closed mouth patient, you can't get them to express their feelings. They have to express their feelings to be able to have a good SDM session. I agree with you. You have to figure out what's the patient want to talk to in that short time interval. So that's paramount. And you can't, with all the comorbidities that some patients have, you can only address one or two. My doctors kid me. I have a really great internal medicine doctor. We say, well, we're going to have 4 or 5 appointments with me, but we go boom, boom, boom. We know each other so well, and I'm so extroverted. We just go boom, boom, boom through stuff. See, I had a best friend. My best friend for 50 years was a cardiologist. So I had my own private cardiologist.
Oh, that's a privilege. 50
years. Yeah. 50 years. She was like a sister. So I'm not the normal patient, but I agree with you. You got to cut to the chase at the beginning to figure out what's bothering the patient.
Yeah, but and I think when we talk about shared decision making, I think we have to focus on that it has to be shared. It's not only the agenda of the patient. Unfortunately, to some extent, you could say for some, because it's not all patients that are as well informed and understand as much as you are, because the title of this program is actually putting evidence into practice. And what my challenge is, to some extent, is that I have all the papers, you know, I just went to a conference and I know that these new drugs, they're really efficacious for A, B, and C. So my target in a consultation is, to be honest, sometimes that I will have a successful consultation if I can convince you to take this tablet. I think it's very important to focus on that it's shared, that we need to align very early what are our expectations, and how do we get to the shared decision? Because I'll go back to, you know, type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease, because in general, the challenge in type 2 diabetes that especially compared to type 1 diabetes, people know that type 1 diabetes is dangerous. If you don't get your insulin, you can die. I mean, insulin is life-saving in type 1. But the challenge in type 2 diabetes is that people often can't feel their disease for the first 10 or 15 years. And I want to give them drugs that I know that there is evidence from that will, on the long term, change their life. But it's drugs that are expensive. They are many. They might even be injectable. You might not be able to feel the effect. You might actually have side effects. And within 15 minutes, I have to get you on board and accept to take this drug. Can you tell me how can the other out there in the audience, what's important for you in order to be convinced about putting the evidence into practice? If you understand what I mean.
Oh, that's a relatively, I think, basic. You can't do it in one appointment. I suggest you have some handouts for those new medicines, especially. The patient needs education. So if you had handouts to give to the patient about XYZ medicine that you're trying to get the patient to consider taking, or a medicine protocol or a treatment, if you give the more handouts you could possibly give for them to take home to study, and then maybe they could come back the next appointment and then they would be more tuned to listening to you. See, education is paramount with the patient. Just to go and just tell the patient at one quick appointment, I want you to get on board with this drug, it might scare the patient. And then to explain in the handout and vocally conditions, the pros and cons of taking the medicine. That's important. And there's always cons for all these drugs that are on the market today, and people get scared when they read all that stuff. And you would be too if you had to take some of these drugs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's right. You really touched one, at least to my opinion, also very important thing, that where we are today in life. I mean, people. I remember when I was a young doctor, I heard that in China, a medical doctor could see between 80 and 100 patients per hour. I was like, oh, wow, and that was just writing out prescriptions. But today, people, they are so well informed. They seek, you know, the internet for the drug that we give them. And so we need to use all the tools that we can have in the toolbox. And I fully agree with you. Very often I hand out, you know, information about a drug, information about why to measure blood pressure, and, you know, all the way from erectile dysfunction to, you know, chronic kidney disease, or if I want to start a GLP-1 receptor agonist or an SGLT2 inhibitor, people have heard about it and they don't want to start. And then I nudge them, as we say. I give a handout and say, well, go talk to your wife about it. And, or maybe your cardiology friend, he might not know as much as I do about diabetes drugs. Well, but I mean, it's a good idea to have people go home and consider it. And because that's another thing that we should also discuss a little bit here, is how do we make sure that the shared decision making that we do at one consultation is followed up? So if I give you a handout, how should we remember to pick it up at the next consultation? What's your suggestion? So I'll give you a handout about GLP-1 or an SGLT2 inhibitor. What do we do 3 months after then?
Well, in your next appointment notes, put in there for them to take home that this discussion will be on the next appointment, and for them to bring the paperwork back. And another thing here that you need to mention is to give the patient alternative drugs. You know, if you're handing out a paperwork for drug one, give the patient an alternative to look at, so they have an alternative drug to study, to come back. So you have one or two drugs. If they don't like one, because one size doesn't necessarily fit all. You know, if you're trying to push one and one doesn't work with the patient, and you can't come to a consensus, because all of this SDM is all about coming to a consensus. I had a story from a very famous person in the United States. I belong to the Kidney Research Institute board in Seattle, KRI, with Dr. Jonathan Hilmefarb. And one of our members on our board is very well known in Washington, D.C. He told me a story about how he got a kidney failure at a young age of 20, and his parents were so upset, they took him down from Maine or something where he lived down to Washington, D.C. to a special doctor. And that doctor worked with him, and he didn't die. He was given a death sentence. He was going to die in 2 years. Guess what? He's now approximately 55 years old. They worked with him, and they came to a decision way, way before this discussion on SDM, worked together to come to a conclusion about alternative ways of treating that particular patient. And look at what he's doing today in society for his kidney community, helping other patients. So alternatives are great for them to study. And there's other things besides handouts. You can give them ideas on websites to go to research while they're at home, or videos or podcasts, all sorts of things.
Yeah, and one of the things that I also like, I use it, but I don't know what you think about it, that when I give handouts or your websites, or we even have, you know, classes or courses at Steno Diabetes Center as well, I also tell the patients to write down questions as they come during the 3-4 months where I don't see them. Because as you said, we only have like 15 minutes together 3 or 4 times per year. And you might, as soon as you get home, say, oh, why didn't I talk to Tina about this? And then say, wait, write it down and bring the notes when you go to the next consultation, because you might even forget it yourself. To have that as a, you know, tool also for the shared decision making. What do you think about that?
I think that's good. And I have another idea for doctors to suggest to their patients.
Let me hear.
About classes. It's a good idea to get these. I didn't get much help in when I was diagnosed with kidney failure. I got virtually nothing. I slipped through the cracks, and then I demanded information. But a good class on kidney failure, because when you have some classes that are oriented where groups of patients get together in small groups, okay, and they discuss and tell their stories. Patients can learn from other patients. That's critical. You learn from other patients.
Yeah. And you don't feel as alone as you actually often
right.
are. Very often. So you can say, oh, wow, did you also experience, you know, worries about your mother having heart attack at a young age? And so that's really a good idea. And also with those classes, you'll have more than there'll be a healthcare provider there available, you know, to maybe facilitate a discussion. So you'll have more than the 15 minutes a couple of times per year in classes like that. I really like that. Yeah.
You can facilitate a SDM discussion in those small groups and have a doctor there, and you can practice. You know, it's really, you can actually do the practicing about, you know, coming together in consensus, you know, one-on-one between the doctor and the patients. through that class process.
Yeah. Again, now you also say, you know, people with chronic kidney disease can be brought together, because I actually think that as a doctor, it's, you know, if people have, you know, challenges with their heart, everyone knows it's dangerous. I mean, you could die due to a heart attack. Pretty much everyone knows that. But I actually, when we are going back to, you know, focusing on chronic kidney disease, I, as a doctor, sometimes see it as a challenge. How do I explain, you know, the challenge and the severity of an individual with type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease in a good way, you know, not to scare the patient, but to inform the patient, you know, the kidneys are suffering. And it's a combination of high blood pressure, lipids, glucose, blah, blah, blah. Again, going back to something they can't feel. But my experience is that when you spend time explaining it, people appreciate it, but they're also worried about it. I mean, they're really worried about going, needing dialysis at the end. So, because they know, so do you think that there are specific things that we need as healthcare providers to consider in individuals with chronic kidney disease compared to foot ulcers, or what's your, it's difficult, you know?
I think you're right on track here. When patients get the diagnosis of kidney failure, they run through all sorts of emotions. Anger, frustration, frightening. They're frightened. They think they're going to die. I remember, and they think, my God, I'm going to have dialysis.
Yeah.
I hate needles. I'm afraid of needles in my arms because I had 35 of them from that heart incident of ventricular tachycardia. And I'm petrified of needles. And the biggest thing they have to remember, and doctors have to remember, is please educate your patients. Don't stop educating them. And the more education they have, the patients can wrap their arms around their disease to the point that they love their disease. Not really, I don't mean this literally, but they can become familiar with their disease and not be petrified. We don't want the patients to live their life, to live to die. The point is, you must live your life to live it the way your life was intended to be, the way God made you to live it. You live your life to live it. I live my life to, I have all sorts of diseases from head to toe, including Charcot foot, which is very rare in a type 2 diabetic, and on going blind in the right eye. That's a diabetic disease with at any rate. But I am happy, and I smile, and I do things for society. I'm outward focused rather than self-inward focused. And that's another thing. Our bodies are made up of body, mind, and spirit. And doctors take care of body. But we have to remember as doctors that the human being has got the mind and the spirit part.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Molly. But I think you're also an easy patient for a healthcare provider because you have this positive mind. And I think, as you said before, patients are very different. One size doesn't fit all. It's not everyone that are as good as you are to express their needs, their expectations, where they're from, where they want to go. And that's my challenge, because remember, I might see 15 or 20 patients per day. There might be 3 or 4 Mollies, but there might also be some that have a depression that are very, and I think it, I have to, delete my previous consultation before I start the next one and start from scratch and build it up in a completely new perspective with the new individual. And I think that's one of the things we as doctors really need to remember when doing shared decision making, because there might actually be someone sitting in front of me, 50-year-old male, who's not good in expression, what's going on in his head, who is actually most worried about maybe getting into erectile dysfunction or maybe getting into amputation, because that's actually what his mother suffered from. But he can't tell me. And for me, that's a completely different discussion if I'm going to have a successful shared decision making. So it's a challenge.
I can see the challenges now from the doctor's standpoint, because you have there's human beings are they run the gamut of all aspects of the graph.
Yeah, and you said that there are people, as we both said, being worried about dying due to chronic kidney disease, but there are also some that don't care about that they have albuminuria and that there is a decline in their kidney function because they've heard that, well, come on, I have two kidneys, don't worry. So that's also part of the spectrum. So, but as I tell my students, medical students, that's the wonderful thing about being a doctor, that you need to take care of everyone and not only the right people, as Molly, as you know, being interactive and so on. So,
but you know, you have to realize also, Tina, that all doctors aren't as communicative as you. A lot of doctors just go and make these appointments, and they sit there and they are at their computers, and they themselves are not very communicative with the patients.
But what's your recommendation to those patients out there?
They're historically, you know, how the olden days where the patients thought that the doctors were gods. You get what I'm trying to get back at there? And I think that mentality is carried over to our current culture in our societies in the world.
And but what's go ahead.
We have to somehow get rid of that mentality, because doctors are human beings, okay? Lead patients are human beings. And for shared decision-making, we have to understand that doctors, they have positives and they're human beings, and so they have some negatives, just like a patient does. How do we get rid of it? I think it starts at the medical schools, as I said before. Medical schools have got to change their curriculum a little bit. They need to teach doctors to be more communicative, to take some communication classes to be able to size up patients, to be able to take a class in SDM. That would help if they had two classes in their studies. Okay, that would be tremendous help, I think. I mean, it would be as much help as taking a pharmacy or whatever. There are other things. And also, they could have some ongoing type of training.
But I think actually most medical schools today are not as old-fashioned as when I was studying medicine. Things are already moving towards that. Because it has to be like that, because as we talked about before, patients are seeking knowledge at the internet or many other places. So it's not just, you know, the doctor being the god anymore. So that has, at least in Denmark and many of the countries that I'm aware of, where medical school is, has changed dramatically. So I think things are moving in the right direction. But maybe also as suggestion to patients, I mean, what's your suggestion to patients? What should they do if they have a doctor that is not good in shared decision making?
Well, I think that then in that case, the patient's got to step up and be honest with the doctor and ask the doctors to tell the doctors they would like more communication to and fro between each other. They'd like the doctors to address their concerns. They're concerned about their health. And when they go into the appointment, they'd like to spend a few minutes so they can tell the doctor their symptoms or what they're bothered with and have the doctor address those issues. If they don't speak up, the doctors can't read their minds. So they have to be honest. So that patient then has to, again, be the leader at communicating their thoughts and their desires to the doctor. Otherwise, you have a stalemate. You have a stalemate. You don't get anywhere.
No, that's right. And as you said, doctors are also just humans, and actually on a pretty regular basis, I would say, I actually recommend some of my patients, if they do not have a family doctor that they're comfortable with, I actually suggest them to pick another doctor, because with type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease or whatever, you know, comorbidities and diabetes, it's important that you have a doctor that you really believe in and that you have a good collaboration with. But of course, it shouldn't be the first way out. You should try to be able to develop a good level of shared decision making with your doctor. But if it's not possible, then it is, at the end of the day, an opportunity also.
You don't keep riding that bicycle and spinning those wheels around, right? You should go and research for another doctor that you can communicate more effectively with. So,
Molly, sorry, go ahead.
I like to tell the patients a great little quick story about, I was about ready to have an operation, and my medical center doesn't like to operate at all on my body unless I'm dying, and I was supposed to have a hernia operation, and the great surgeon, he swung his little chair around to my, and he sat knee to knee, and he took my two hands together, and he put his hands together, and he put his face relatively close to my face and looked me straight in the eye with smiling eyes and said, "Molly, Molly," he says, "do not worry. I will get you through this surgery." And on his lapel, he had a little box. And when he pulls the string, a little person comes out and squeaks, "Hello, hello, how are you today?" It talks, okay? And he says, "Don't worry." And he had if I looked into the eyes of that surgeon, I could see God. The eyes were smiling so effectively. What this doctor was, he was, and it was awesome. His nickname was Dr. Patch.
Okay.
Okay. So he's a very famous doctor at UW. He's retired now. He was one of the best stomach surgeons in all of Western Washington, the state of Washington. And I've had three or four surgeries by him. And every surgery he pulled me through, and I didn't lose my kidney function. Because you know, going under anesthetic, you can lose your kidney function.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I recovered. And the point of the story is that doctor gave me trust with a funny thing he wore in his lapel to make patients feel at ease, you see, and those loving eyes, trust.
Yeah, you felt safe in his hands is the take home, I think. Yeah.
You felt like you're in the hands of God.
Yeah.
So when I was in the operating room, I would lay on the table and say, "Thank you, God, for all these lovely providers. And I have many people praying for you while you operate on me." So then I would say, and so they're all praying as you operate. So I said, "Let's hit it," as I was being operated on. Amen.
Wonderful, Molly. Well, I mean, the two of us could go on forever, but we were asked not to stay in here too long. So I think I'll just love to summarize a little bit about what we talked about. We tried to take type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease from evidence to practice. And for me, I've learned a lot. We have to remember that in respect to shared decision making, we're just together slots of 15 minutes as doctors, patients are living with their diabetes 24/7. We have challenges with different agendas. Try to align them from the beginning. try to use some educational material, handouts, classes with people in the same level of disease, good interaction, try to describe as doctor mode of actions. Why are we worried? What's in the papers? Why do we want to give these drugs that actually on the long term save lives? Good interaction. Don't stay tuned only on the computer. Eye contact, maybe even a hand on the knee or in the back, hand to hand shake. We unfortunately stopped that a little bit after COVID. But a human interaction, doctors are also humans. We need to take care of each other. Patients are heterogeneous, not same. And that's a challenge as doctors. And I've learned a lot, Molly. Can you give me a short elevator message of your key takeaways to the healthcare providers out there?
Well, and also to give alternate medical and protocol treatments for the patient to choose. So the patient has some choices.
Yeah.
And to realize, the biggest to realize, some doctors don't really get this, to realize that these two diseases are chronic.
Yeah.
And the patients have to change their lifestyles. And at times they make mistakes. And it requires sometimes a lot of patience by doctors.
Yeah.
Because they take the disease home 24/7, and the doctors only see them rarely, a few minutes here and a few minutes there on a yearly basis. And
well, Molly, thank you very much for sharing your life story. Very much will focus on diabetes.
Oh, you only got one. You got a little snippet.
Yeah, I kind of get that impression. We could keep on going for days. It was really.
I have great doctors, and so my doctors are. If they wouldn't be doctors, we would all be great friends. You see,
yeah.
Because we're very open.
Yeah,
my doctors are. How do I put it? Well, they're. They all have my back, as they say.
It was really wonderful having you sharing your thoughts here. And I hope that the audience learned at least a little bit or as much as I did. And
did you actually learn from me?
Yeah, it was really fun to talk to you. And you know, I did. I learned from all my consultations. And I think that's what we do as doctors as well. Even though I've had thousands of consultations, you always build on experience. So it was really wonderful. And I'd like to thank the audience out there for listening and encourage them not only to listen to this podcast, but also to take part in some of the case-based modules that we've actually put on this program website where there are even more cases and actually reference to some really good papers where you can dig into the more specific part of the evidence. So thank you very much, Molly, and thank you very much for it to everyone out there.
Right, and I appreciate the opportunity to help in this your studies, and it's been a pleasure to be on this with you and to meet you, Dr. Tina.
Yeah, thank you, Molly.
Thank you for listening to Podcast to Practice, brought to you by Springer Health Plus IME. For more information on our educational programs available, visit ime.springerhealthplus.com.